Good evening from the White House in Washington. Ladies and gentlemen, the American Broadcasting Company brings you an address by the President of the United States.
My fellow citizens, I want to talk to you tonight about our country, about its future, and about its importance to the hopes and aspirations of all mankind. It's a good thing to stop and think about where we are, where we're going, and what our national aims and objectives should be. The elected representatives of the people, and particularly their president, have a duty to report from time to time on these basic questions. On Monday, I sent the mid-year economic report to the Congress. Tonight, I want to tell you something about what was in that report, and also about the federal budget, concerning which there has recently been much discussion. The history of the United States is a story of constant economic growth and expansion. When I was a young man, the population of the United States was between 90 and 100 million people. Today, it is nearly 150 million. 40 years ago, the national income, the total of all the income received by all the people of the United States, was in the neighborhood of $30 billion. Today, the national income is well over $200 billion. It has increased more than 10 times as fast as the population. These figures are a measure of our rising standard of living, our increasing freedom from toil and poverty. They are the result of constant expansion in agriculture and industry. In fact, unless we do expand our production steadily, we run into economic difficulties. We cannot stand still. We must expand if we are to stay prosperous. A little more than 10 years ago, President Roosevelt called for a national income of $100 billion a year. This was a surprising figure when he mentioned it, but we far surpassed it in the space of 10 years. Our national income last year was $225 billion. If we can make such progress in the past, we can go on making it in the future. Before long, our national income should reach a total of $300 billion or more. But if we want to reach that goal, we all have to have some hard work ahead of us. We shall have to make wise decisions about our national policies, and we shall have to be sure that the selfish interests do not drive us into the ditch as they have done before. At the present time, there is a drop in employment and in production in certain lines. I've been concerned about this, and I've studied the facts carefully. I want to tell you what those facts are. As to employment, we have now more than 59.5 million people working in civilian jobs. This is a tremendous number, but last year at this time, we had a little over 61 million employed. Furthermore, there are more people looking for jobs this year because about 1 million young people and veterans have become available for employment for the first time. Consequently, although the number of people with jobs is very high, the number of people without jobs is substantially larger than it was a year ago. Last year at this time, the number of people out of work was as low as we can expect it to be in peacetime. It was a little over 2 million. Now the number out of work is almost 4 million. While much of this unemployment is temporary and is part of the normal process of changing jobs, there are substantial numbers of people who have been out of work for some time and who are now suffering hardship. As to production, the output of all goods and services declined slightly during the first half of this year. In some types of business, there has been no decline at all. In others, there have been slight increases. In manufacturing, however, the output in June had dropped 13% from the high 10% 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 from the high point of last November. In the economic message in January, I said that we should strive for a 3 or 4% increase in total output this year if we were to maintain maximum production and employment. Instead, we have fallen somewhat below last year's level. These are the facts. I am not coloring them one way or the other. Now, some people are saying, and saying very loudly, that these facts mean that we're in a depression. Many of these people, for political reasons, would like to have a depression. Others are saying that there is nothing to worry about, and that an increase in the number looking for work is a good thing. This attitude ignores the human suffering caused by unemployment. Both groups are wrong. We're not in a depression. But an increase in the number of people out of work is something to worry about and is something that must be cured. If we were in a depression, I would be the first person to tell you, and I would call upon all the resources of this nation to stop it. What we face today is not a depression, and if we follow the right course, it will not become a depression. We're going through an economic change, which is the result of the inflationary spiral that we were in until a few months ago. I warned repeatedly against the dangers of this inflation, and I asked the Congress time and time again to take steps to curb the excessive rise in prices. I did this because I knew that if prices went too high, they would topple over and bring about a decline in production and employment. Unfortunately, my recommendations were not accepted. Prices continued to climb. As the most urgent needs of the people and of industry were satisfied, these high prices cut down the sale of goods. As a result, production declined. Prices are now finding more reasonable levels, a fact which should stimulate sales and production again. In this period of change, our national economy is protected by important economic reforms, which the government has adopted over the last 16 years. Unemployment insurance and Social Security are helping people who are out of work and are helping to maintain consumer purchasing power. The Farm Price Support Program is keeping agriculture on a fairly even keel. The insurance of bank deposits protects us against bank runs. Our controls over the marketing and exchange of securities prevent wild speculative sprees and stock market crashes. Because of these and other government policies, we have suffered far less in this period of declining prices than we ever have in a similar period before. These government measures, all of which were bitterly opposed by selfish interests when they were passed, have proved their value in protecting the economy. Furthermore, all groups in the nation have gained a better understanding of economic problems since the 1920s. And this understanding on the part of businessmen, consumers, and labor has helped to cushion the process of price change. Now, all of us, business, labor, agriculture, and government must take positive action together to restore the upward trend. The decisions we make in the next few months can prolong the present deadline, can prolong the present decline, or they can turn it into an upswing. Our goal is maximum employment and production. The only way to reach this goal is to increase our economic activity. The needs of our people are constantly growing. Our skills are increasing. Every year brings forth new inventions and techniques, new opportunities for improvement and development. The tools are at hand for continued economic expansion. All we need is the courage to use them. Businessmen should take advantage now of opportunities for modernizing their plants and for new business investment. And together with labor should cooperate in achieving higher production and employment. Farm production should continue at high levels. The government likewise must direct its policies toward continued economic expansion. The country is growing, and we need to preserve and develop our natural resources for this generation and the next. We must therefore press forward with programs of soil conservation and river valley development and other public works. Economic expansion requires constantly rising living standards for our people. We must therefore expand our programs of social security, education, health, and housing. We must build as we are building for the future. There are men of little vision who say we ought not to go on doing these things. They say they cost too much. They say we're wasting money. The truth is that an investment in the future of this great nation is not a waste of money. The dollars we put into our rivers and our power plants will be repaid to us in fruitful valleys and prosperous communities. Expenditures for the health and education of our children will yield us untold dividends in human happiness. But say those who object, look at the size of the budget. All right, let's look at the budget. The budget includes the cost of almost everything the government does. It is not simply the payroll of federal employees, as some people appear to think. In fact, the pay of federal civilian employees is only about 12% of the budget. The budget includes all federal expenses for national defense, for international aid, and for the conduct of the affairs of this nation abroad. It includes federal aid to the states for roads and health and other programs. It includes atomic energy and dams and soil conservation and flood control and many other things essential to the growth of our country. These things are necessary. But in the present budget, we have not 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 provided extravagantly for them. Let me make it clear that I believe in prudent financial management. That has been my rule in my private life and in my public life. I am working for the reorganization and better management of the government to achieve greater efficiency. I believe in the economical use of the public's money, and the budget is based on that principle. If we examine the items in the budget, we see in dollar figures the magnitude of the task which confronts this nation in protecting the cause of peace and freedom. Over 3/4 of the budget is due to international events. Less than 1/4 arises from the domestic functions of the government. Let me explain to you why this is so. The total of the whole budget today is about $42 billion. Of this total, $32 billion is the result of either past wars or our efforts to prevent another war. Three big items make up this $32 billion. The first is national defense. That accounts for over $14 billion. The armed services, at the start of this year, wanted a much bigger sum than that, but I cut it down to the minimum necessary for our protection and for the preservation of peace in this troubled world. It is expensive to keep up the forces necessary to prevent war, but in the long run, it could be a lot more expensive not to have them. The second item is the cost of our international programs.